Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is continued reading of Rivelet magazine. This will be linked to the last one, but it's the October 2018 edition. And we continue reading about Invictus Games, these people, veterans, which, look, it's more people who are taking Gatsby rehabilitation. This is my general thing. Okay, so this is about various people who are going in these games, which is really just a sports meet for people who've had military backgrounds. It seems like the West, I don't think the Taliban would be welcomed here, or people from the Soviet Union, but eventually, who knows what will come along. Okay, so there's a lot of, it's a bit hard to decode the political stuff here. So this is this person, a lady, Ruth is her name, and she's been in the army, had cancer, so it's got really nothing to do with it, but she's a real diehard, loves it all. So this is the finishing of her story. Born and raised in Perth with a grandpa who served in World War II, I was the kid who threw little toy men off the veranda with parachutes attached to them. After school, she studied law and worked at the Western Australian government. She gave up her six-figure salary to follow her dream. So I assume six-figure salary, they're not, it's not in decimal points. It's not doing sense with it. Army, she says, has forced her out of her comfort zone as her cancer diagnosis. I don't know how much you do in the army. Like her fellow Invictus competitors, she was uncovered new abilities, improving her resilience. Quote, it doesn't matter what's gone wrong, whether you've been blown up or got cancer or someone's driven into your motorbike, says Ruth. The thing that defines you is that you've gotten back up. You've got, righto, what's next? What can I do? Okay. I'm sort of in the overall area, so I'll just see what it is. The next one is Inner Corner Meet 16 Athletes. I think that might leave that alone. Well, let's see. Well, this Invictus Games. There's only so many athletes you can talk about. Well, let's see. World War II veteran Donald Kennedy remembers the sacrifices of the men who served in the Merchant Navy. Stories. Steve Mitchum. And so this is this. People still talking about World War II. Okay, there's majority of people I've worked with are actually Korean War and Vietnam vets. Okay. Donald Kennedy wants younger generations to know the important role the Merchant Navy played during World War II. Interesting. It also turned up in, so the term for Merchant Navy's war vessels are called MVs. And MVs, vessels were actually defensively armed, so they had anti-aircraft guns and anti-submarine stuff. Donald Kennedy's crew pass, Norwegian paper, and photos of him as a teenage seaman. Ew. Okay. Well, that Norway thing was pretty rough. Okay. Don't call me a hero, says Donald Kennedy, president of the Merchant Navy's RSL sub-branch. So, God, I might start my own sub-branch. There were plenty of heroes in the Merchant Navy's during World War II, and I wasn't one of them. I was just a bloke who went to war when I was 16. Now 91, he's only agreed to tell his story to remind younger generations of the critical role the Merchant Navy's played in the defeat of Nazism and Imperial Japan. Casualties were horrendous, Don points out, particularly during the Battle of the Atlantic, which Winston Churchill admitted gave him sleepless nights during the war. Oh, poor man. The settler's U-boat hunted the ships supplying desperately needed food, fuel, weapons and troops to Britain. Of course, that's a pretty interesting story. Of course, the U-boats, I think, over 33% died. One in three got knocked off. The number of Allied merchant ships sunk in theatres between 39 and 45 was around 4,000, Don explains. At one time, in 42, more ships were being sunk than could possibly be replaced.
Uh-huh.
Yes, only at one time in 42, but only for a few months before it really ramped up. More ships, thousands of seamen were killed, either in initial attack or they died in the freezing waters. No wonder they called it the Cruel Sea. Quote, I was never one known... I was never in what was known as the Western approaches of the North Atlantic, Don says. I was never in a convoy which there were most of the merchant seamen's died. But he did serve in the Caribbean Sea, South Atlantic, South Pacific and Indian Ocean. Most of the time, unlikely as it seems, on a Norwegian tanker, M.T. Serat said. So he's Norwegian, but he's not there. Just 12 years old and living in Sydney Manly when the war was declared in 39. Okay. Don had joined the National Emergency Service as a bicycle messenger, delivering communications to various air raid wardens. However, Don was anxious to play a bigger role, so he presented his father to help him join the Merchant Navy. By 44, the Australian Armed Forces would only accept volunteers aged 18 and over. Oh, this is interesting. This is amazing that people were still volunteering. Well, everyone's cark, isn't it? It's like Japan, casualties were pretty hard. After an initial 2-minute interview with the recruiting officer, he was given a piece of paper and told to present himself to the first mate, Sirad. Sly and stuttering, Don boarded the ship. This tall boat, he's 44, he's not there, he came out, took a piece of paper, looked me up and down and said, come back tomorrow with your gear. Then he shut the door. The whole thing took 90 seconds. The same, then came the scary moment from Don, of Don's war, telling his mum. His father and mother had separated, and Don's older brother, Roy, was already serving in the air crew of the RAF Bombers Command. You won't last long there, mate. Don left it until the last minute. His mother, Jessie, tried to talk him out of it, but it was too late. He signed up on the morning before he sailed. She walked to me with the Manly Ferry. I was cocky, but when I turned around, I saw my mum crying. I'll never forget that. Don has kept his crew path, Norwegian paybook, and photos of himself as a teenager seaman. As the only Australian on the Norwegian ship, he found an unexpected obstacle. They thought he's an Austrian. They thought I was a POM, and they didn't like POMs. Norway had fallen to the Nazis in 40, but most of its merchant navy, then one of the largest of the world, escaped to join the Allied corps coming under the British command. Don's first voyage took him through the Panama Canal to pick up high-octane gasoline off Aruba off the coast of Venezuela. U-boats were active in the Caribbean, and a loaded tanker was sitting target. Don says, one hit and you go up. Months later, in the Caribbean, when Don had become a cannon commander in charge of the 20mm anti-aircraft gun. So that's sort of like a nothing gun. After a 10-minute training course, the alarm bell sounded in the dead of night when seamen were not even allowed to light a cigarette on deck for fear of alerting U-boats. A parachute with an enormously bright light was seen descending. Hearing the Norwegian phrase for fire, Don snapped himself to the gun seat. I could see traces going up, but I doubt I killed anyone. That wasn't the end of the adventure of the Sirad in 1945. Ship was returning to Australia after picking up a particularly volatile coal tower. 2 days out of Brisbane, Don realised the ship was zigzagging. A Norwegian crew member had thought he'd seen a periscope. Then another thought he'd seen a track of a torpedo coming towards us. And the story is that it missed us by 10 metres. Though Don now believes it was a false alarm, it was one of the worst moments of his life. Then a Lockheed Hudson bomber arrived. The pilot stayed with us for 3 to 4 hours. If there had been an enemy sub, the plane would have kept it submerged, unable to keep up with us. When the plane had to return to base, the pilot flew very low and over us and waved. Then the plane was flying off. It did a shimmy as if to say good luck, mates. Don accepted the discharge, 14 months of service with no leave, but signed up a month later again to his month of anguish. This time was to serve the US Army transport ship San Pedro. This explains why Dom has so many campaign medals, 12 in all, from 4 countries, Britain, Norway, USA and Australia. But there's no decoration medals, he says, as he struggles to identify everyone pinned to his suit jacket. As I said, I'm no hero. There you go. Jeez, just Norway was pretty bad. Okay, so that's the basic sort of stuff that you hear in these books. Anzac House. Okay. Okay, so Anzac House is this skyscraper place. I don't know where we moved to. The headquarters, the home of the Anzac spirit, the headquarters of RSL Logistics Wales has changed locations many times over the years, but the spirit of Anzac House remains the same, as space that represents the values of the RSL New South Wales and facilitates the important works of the League. The League, yeah, I think I rather like the word League. So I might, just all go on a picnic up there. Following World War One, the RSL operated in New South Wales from several locations, including Pitt Street, Bathurst Street, George Street, Angel Place, and the Anzac Memorial. It was known then as the Return Sailors and Soldiers Imperial League of Australia, RSILA. It was named the Return Sailors Soldiers Airmen's Imperial League during World War II. Oh, okay. In 1944, however, the Lord Mayor of Sydney, the Right Honourable Reginald James Bartley, convened a public meeting at Sydney Town Hall to inaugurate a fund to raise money to establish a club, the members of which would be those men and women who eligible membership of the RSALIA. So that's an interesting thing you don't know that about that. At the meeting, it was resolved a fund to be known as the Anzac House Fund that would be created. The fund would develop a building that would be a memorial to the men and women fighting in service of World War II, which would be under the control of the RSALIA. The public appeal was launched on the 1st of May in 1944. The support of the newspaper, the Anzac House, will be a permanent record of the gratitude. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.